Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The following is an exclusive presentation of News Radio KMAN. Your home for K-State athletics. It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
Troy, are you familiar with the Cavender twins?
Yes.
Women's basketball players, and then after playing in Miami, they both decided they're going to take some NIL money, leave basketball, and go train in the WWE.
Correct. Yes.
Well, apparently after a few months of that, they were like, this isn't as fake as we thought it was.
Didn't play out exactly the way that they believed it would, did it?
Yeah, so one of them, I can't remember which one it was, but one was going to transfer to TCU. And then Haley Van Lith, who just played at LSU, is going to transfer to TCU. And like, wow, all of a sudden the Horned Frogs have like a social media all-star team. Because Haley Van Lith is well-known. I think she has over 1 million followers on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
The Cavender twins, I mean, they're definitely maybe known more for social media and, you know, like, you know, their name, image, and likeness over their actual basketball play. Well, now the other Cavender twin is getting back into college basketball. She's going to Miami once again, and so is her sister. So the sister before didn't even play a single game
right
at TCU after transferring. She's heading back to Miami. These gals need to figure out what's going on, make up their minds, I think.
Something along those lines. But it does make you wonder, how much did WWE put into the two of them? Training.
Well,
and
this came out last year that the WWE was going to be very active in name, image, and likeness, which was basically going to be a recruiting tool to find.
Right.
Because pro wrestling needs just more athletes in general. The best wrestlers were former athletes, from
sure.
guys that played in the Super Bowl to played college football or college basketball or.
Yeah.
I can't remember the guy's name, but in AEW, he played a little bit in the NBA, and he's like 7'4", huge dude. But he used to play in the – but they make the best wrestlers because they're just athletes. Too many wrestlers out there that can't figure out why they're not getting over and how their wrestling is subpar. It's like, well, you're not a natural athlete. You know, it's just not going to be better than the actual athletes themselves.
Speaking of, by the way, wrestlers – my boy, Justin Gaethje.
Oh, yeah.
How about that ending on Saturday night?
Yeah.
In UFC, what was that? UFC
300.
Yeah.
Literally 1 second remaining.
Max Holloway.
Knocked the out.
Yep.
Oh,
I just saw the highlight. I don't watch UFC often.
Well, and again, that's a case where I know Justin because of his stint as a wrestler, All-American wrestler at Northern Colorado.
Oh,
and
really?
His there first UF, one of his first UFC matches, or not UFC, but one of his
MMA.
First MMA matches he held at the school.
Oh, wow.
They put together a card and had a night there.
That's pretty sick.
You know, Morganville, Kansas, we have an old gym there, and it still looks like it was gym from the 1930s. It's got the rotating hands clock
yes.
that kept the time
yep.
on the scoreboard. Yep. Instead of a buzzer, there was a red light that went off.
Mm-hmm.
The gym is still really cool.
Yeah.
And it's in really good shape. But when it comes to actual activities, there's been one activity that's been in that gym for the last 20 years, and it was an MMA, I was about to say fight, but it was an event. They had like 10 fights on the card. Junction City, we used to have, K-Rock, we used to actually do a bunch of those events.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if there was an actual name for like the company that would put it on, but it would always feature local
mm-hmm.
MMA fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a blast. Being up close to the cage and actually watching in person, I think, is way better than just watching on TV. TV is cool and all, like being in the octagon, the camera and all that stuff, and the MMA fights, the UFC with, you know, Joe Rogan on the call. I think it's kind of fun sometimes, but I don't go out and buy the pay-per-views, but just the amateur fights and watch them in person, having a few beers, getting that table, being close to the cage. It's pretty cool. As long as somebody's getting their ass knocked out.
Sure, yeah.
Exactly, mm-hmm. yeah.
If we're just throwing some jabs and we're going to the ground and it's ground and pound, I get kind of bored.
Have ended the way it did on Saturday night was
with all circumstances,
crazy.
Yeah. Holloway had the fight won, and then in the last 10 seconds, and he's been on record in the octagon in the last 3 years saying that he's the best boxer in the UFC. And to have a fight won and then just like, hey, why don't we just throw for 10 seconds and then to sleep a guy with a second left on the clock? Insanity.
Painful. So there's no say by the bell.
No.
In UFC. Well, it's because there's no count, right?
Correct.
Yeah. You get tagged and you get knocked out. That's the fight.
Yeah. And he slept him with a second left, like right on the money.
It seems like it's always the punches that. It didn't look like it was like the best connection. You're not on the replay. You're not seeing the connection. Here comes the hand.
Yeah,
it's real slow mo, goosh, and then you see the person's face just turn into pudding.
Yeah, not a typical Tyson punch. Yes,
exactly. Yeah.
It's like just caught him just enough.
Yeah.
on the chin.
Yeah,
on the jaw to send vibrations up to the brain and tell him to go to sleep.
So anyway. So the long path to get from the Cavender twins to Justin Gaethje.
Welcome to the game, Mitch Fortner, Troy Coverdale, and Owen Burke.
Then again, it's been a week. We haven't had much conversation this
week. Well, yeah. I mean, 2 days off, basically, other than on Tuesday. I talked to Dalton Reisner, and Monday was our last full show, pretty much. And we're with you until 6 o'clock. We got two interviews today coming up in hour number two. We will speak to the 3-time academic All-American and like a 27-time just regular basketball All-American for women's basketball. Ayoka Lee will join us at 5:25, talk a little bit about her decision, a little bit about her injury middle of this past season,
mm-hmm.
how much pain she was in. And remember, when she was playing with a broken ankle for 2 games, she was National Player of the Week. On a broken freaking ankle.
It is amazing what the human body can do.
Also in this first hour, it's routine at this point. Going to speak with Classy Cats head coach Sarah Heptig along with Captain Jenna Gillespie because they just won another national championship. So we're going to have them on here in a little bit later on. You know, speaking of another fight, I don't know if fight's the right word. Troy brought this up in the office, and I remember looking into the details about this yesterday while I was listening to Brian Smoller call the K-State baseball game. So obviously this has been some major headlines, and it's even getting a little bit bigger today, and it has to do with Caitlin Clark, who seems like now on this show we're almost bringing her up every day, but she's a phenom, and we're seeing a major shift in women's sports as we speak because of her. But it has to do with her contract. She was drafted by Indiana. Was that on Monday night?
Mm-hmm.
First overall pick, and she has that. Was it yesterday or 2 days ago? She had a really awkward interaction with a member of the Indiana media, bringing up the little heart with the heart with your hand, and he got real creepy.
What the heck was Greg Doyle thinking?
That was weird.
I'd never heard of him.
I have. Oh, he is controversial, but can also be very on point sometimes. That time, no. Mm-mm. Way off base. Creepy. I mean, it gave off creepy old man vibes.
Yeah.
On top of everything.
Yeah, I'm not going to go into all the audio and stuff, but it sounded like he was kind of hitting on her in a creepy way.
Yeah.
But also, her contract details coming out, and people are like, holy crap. It's like as if we were just first noticing this. Yeah, athletes in the WNBA don't get paid crap. Caitlin Clark, who's the number one overall pick, is going to make $76,000 in her first year. Now, that contract, which can be up to 4 years with an option in that fourth year, she can make up to like $97,000 in that fourth year. First of all, this is nothing new. Women in women's basketball can go make more money and a lot more money overseas.
It's why Brittany Griner was playing in Russia. I was thinking about this a little bit earlier today, more so because I heard the mention of Caitlin Clark playing in the Olympics. Becky Hammond.
Olympians don't make anything either, hardly.
Also true.
As long as you medal.
But what it did in the midst of this controversy, it jogged my memory. Becky Hammond, the head coach of the Aces, actually holds Russian citizenship. She played for the Russian Olympic team a number of years back because she wasn't going to crack the lineup with Team USA and how it was just stacked at the time. So she took advantage of the fact that she had played in Russia so many times over and took on a Russian citizenship. Women's basketball overseas is a much more popular sport even than what it is in the United States. And those club teams pay. They pay big bucks.
Peyton Williams, former K-State basketball player, she was the big four Aoka Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Went over to Russia for a year or two maybe and made some cash.
Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that is so disingenuous, though, about the argument about what the pay is that people forget or are at least not looking at the bigger picture. And that is, you're not going to have WNBA players making what NBA players make. Oh, need to because of equality.
Whoopi Goldberg had a monologue today about that on her show, The Talk or whatever it is, or The View.
The View.
And it's just one of those really late to the party, not noticing what's going on.
You financially cannot have them have the same type of pay. The NBA is a multi-billion with a B dollar industry. The WNBA, at its best, is valued at $75 million. M versus B. They can't afford it. They can't afford to pay what they male players make. There's no way that there can be equality in it because there's no value.
Yeah, it's a business thing because in 2022, the NBA made $10 billion was their league revenue in 2022. Just a year later in 2023, the WNBA was around $200 million. So vastly different, unfortunately.
And that was after a buy-in from some major investors.
Mm-hmm.
It floors me that we've got people who don't understand just the basic economics of the matter.
Go ahead.
The thing that frustrates me the most is that those people, because I'm all for it. I think WNBA players should be paid more.
Sure.
The issue is that everyone is sitting here and is like, oh, they should be paid more. They should be paid equally. Do not watch a single game and are part of the problem. If you want WNBA players to be paid more, we have to watch more games. We have to bring them more money so they can turn around and shell it back out.
They're not playing 82 games.
Yep.
You know, schedule isn't what the NBA schedule is. By the way, and this is problematic for them in one aspect, they're playing in the spring and summer when people are active and doing things away from their TVs much more than they are during the course of the winter when the NBA season is going.
Well, and to add to that, I think it needs to be mentioned that there's still, I think, in my opinion, a true sexism towards sports.
Yeah, there is.
There's just not as enough eyeballs on women's basketball. Yep. A big part of that is because it's not seemed as entertaining as men's sports.
I mean, this is the complete opposite of the argument over the men's and women's national soccer teams and what they get paid. It's completely the opposite, except for the one aspect, and that is the men's game as a sport, again, is on a much different financial level than what the women's game is.
The tragic part about that, though, was that the women's USA team was consistently, maybe not consistently, but they are winning World Cups.
Yes.
The men couldn't get out of the first round of the knockout stage.
Yes. Also true.
Yeah.
In the United States, the women are, on the whole, just as popular as the men.
If not more.
And get the sponsorships. It's just that on a worldwide level, the men's game still is dominant, much more so than the women's game. And that has to do with, well, let's be perfectly honest, the way that the world sets up.
Yeah, like you said.
Caitlin Clark is going to get paid, but it's not through the WNBA.
No.
Yeah.
She is actually, and you bring up the point that, you know, by the money they make off TV deals and, you know, other sorts of revenue, that it's not even close to the NBA. Well, maybe Caitlin Clark can be somewhat of a trailblazer. It's not going to be a big jump or anything,
no,
but it could maybe put things in the right direction. Caitlin Clark's going to get paid, but it's going to be through endorsements. I mean, she's about to, I don't know if it's official yet or not, but she's going to sign a Nike deal. She's going to have her own shoe, and she's going to make like $20 million. She would have to play over 220 rookie seasons in the WNBA to match that kind of money.
No,
so she's going to make, when it comes to WNBA players and endorsements, she's at a whole new level than anybody else.
You know what I'm looking forward to?
What's that?
The first time that she and Sabrina Ionescu go head-to-head.
That's going to be a showdown.
Well, isn't the real showdown her and Diana Taurasi? Well, don't they have some sort of feud going on?
Yeah.
Maybe it's the media crazy.
No, Taurasi was pretty dismissive during the course of the Final Four.
See, I missed that. I did not hear what she said.
Yeah,
it's fun when you're out there playing against a lot of 18-year-olds, but when you get to the league, like, this is grown women that have played basketball for 15 to 20 years. Like, it's not going to be this easy. And so that's where it kind of sparked from. That was, like, one of the main comments.
Part of the flaw was that Diana was making the comment while watching her Huskies get their beat in the second half by Iowa.
Took it personal.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And that's a big part of it, but she didn't do herself any favors commenting on the championship game because it still continued to come off as very bitter.
Yeah, so that wasn't great, but yeah, I mean,
yeah, that matchup will be a good one too. But I'm just looking at it from the shooting side of things.
I agree. Well, from star power, and that's the thing that the WNBA has going for it is the emergence of women's college basketball. Mm-hmm. How many players are transferring over, and they're going to bring fans. Like, obviously, Caitlin being one of the front runners, but you have Paige Beckers that's going to come over. There is so much talent in women's basketball right now that I think the game's going to carry. Like, I do think the WNBA is going to see a surge from it too, just because women's basketball players are insanely good right now.
Well, it takes me back to my analogy, and this is where women's basketball is currently at right now, just as a whole, talking about both major levels here, and that is women's basketball, even though they've had plenty of extremely good players, names you would recognize, I think women's basketball has finally found its first larger-than-life star. And going back to my original analogy about that, women's basketball finally has, going to wrestling with its analogy, they finally found a Hulk Hogan.
Hmm.
They finally found that larger-than-life athlete playing at a level we just hadn't seen that could draw eyeballs game after game after game to see what that person does next. Has, you know, did enough on the floor, had enough personality that people would just draw to that as well.
Momentum's going
sell
to
merch.
Yeah, momentum's going to continue in the fact that you had the draft so quickly on the heels, and they talked about this with Dan Patrick and the Danettes talked about this some last hour. You know, you're going to have it on the heels of what was such a great college season now, the WNBA season, with no time truly lost.
Well, and I think just viewership in women's basketball is going to dip again. Without Caitlin Clark, I think it takes a dip again.
In college?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I think
until,
it absolutely
until the
does.
Next star develops, yeah.
I mean, I think that it attracted enough to be like, oh, wow, there's some pretty good athletes, and some of these gals are going to stick around to next year. And, yeah, I think that'll keep some people around. There's more interest, I think, now in the women's NCAA tournament because the last two tournaments have been phenomenal.
Yep.
And I think this year's was better than the men's tournament. I think it was way better, actually. That'll keep some people around. But with Caitlin Clark not around, that'll change things.
Yeah.
We need to take a break. Hour number two, Aoka Lee, speaking of women's basketball, will join us in hour number two. But when we come back, our first interview of the day, we'll speak with Classy Cats head coach Sarah Heptig and captain Jenna Gillespie. They are national champions for the third year in a row. That's next.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Give him the heater, Ricky.
Well, I would bet Owen isn't playing this because of Major League.
You would be correct, sir.
I know better. It's immediately where my mind went.
I don't blame you. If it wasn't for this guy that I'm watching over here, it'd be the same thing.
Well, for me too. I mean, honestly, the first thing I think of is Major League. But, John Moxley uses this as his entrance theme. It's pretty awesome.
That, and I hate the, anyway, hate this song.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
the team owner.
You're quoting. Okay,
the team owner, yes.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations. Go out to Keontae Johnson. A couple of days ago, won the G League Championship as a representative of the Oklahoma City Blue?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, the OKC Blue.
Scored 17 points in a win over the Maine Celtics, 117-100. So already, Keontae Johnson, it looks like he's slimmed up a little bit. He's lost some weight. I can see it in his face a little bit. He's lost a little bit of weight. First year playing some professional basketball, has already won a championship. Back on the game, Mitch Fortner, Trey Coverdale, and Owen Burke. Hour number two will feature Ayoka Lee, K-State multi-time All-American, will be returning for her last year of eligibility this upcoming fall. We'll get back to a segment we actually started, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago. It's a good time to look back and get an update, actually, from Troy. Are the Royals doing okay? We'll answer that question coming up in hour number two. Let's now speak with Classy Cats head coach Sarah Heptig and captain Jenna Gillespie. For the third consecutive year, the Classy Cats have won a national championship in the POM competition last weekend in Orlando, Florida. Coach and Jenna, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Coach, let's start with you. And, this is becoming routine now, winning these national championships. I remember, though, a couple of years ago we spoke about how that the Classy Cats hadn't been competing for quite some time, and you just started to get back into it a couple of years ago. But this is now more team for you guys. Are you now more in a groove on getting ready for these major competitions?
It has definitely been a learning process, and I'm feeling every year how we are growing in going about it. We're learning so much, and I feel like that's going to be the case every single year. We're always going to be learning, always going to be growing. But this year, going into year three, I felt a little bit more confidence, not in the end result, but just I was feeling like we were kind of starting to figure out the timing of when we were learning our routines and then how we were preparing, how we were cleaning our routines. And I started to feel like we were getting at a good pace to where, come February, I will always want more, but we were kind of where I would say a good place to be. We did a local competition at the end of February. And then we performed at a basketball game at the end of February as well too. And this year we even got ourselves a little bit more ahead of the game than we've been in the past, that we were able to invite more alumni back in to be able to watch us, critique us, and give us their feedback. So all those things throughout the months leading up and the weeks leading up, I think help prepare us even better for nationals. So I think every year we're going to be tweaking our process, but I definitely feel more confident than I did when we talked our first year.
Jenna, I'll go to you because you've been a Classy Cat now for, I think, 4 years now. I think I remember seeing something on social media like your freshman year, you're Rookie of the Year or something like that. But how has your career transformed over the years to the first year, second year, getting to that national level and competing, getting prepared for that, but also doing everything for K-State? So how has that changed? How much more is on your plate now than it was 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, it's definitely fun to see how my role has changed from being a freshman and just trying to figure out college and all of the life changes that were happening. And then I just feel like every year I've gotten more experiences under my belt and just have that confidence going into anything new that we do. So this year was very different because I felt like I wanted to make sure that the underclassmen and all of my teammates also had that confidence. So almost trying to figure out how to prepare them for nationals when they haven't been before, or maybe they've only been one time, was difficult at times, but I think it helped me grow so much and it's been so enjoyable. But each year has looked so different and I'm just really grateful for that.
Coach Heptake, it's so common when you, like a Chris Kleiman or Jerome Tang or, you know, coaches will say like, when you win a championship, now a target's on your back and now you're the hunted instead of the hunters. Does that mentality work? Is it still the same with competitive dancing, this national level, going to Orlando every year? Does that mindset change over the years?
We try to not focus on that. We try every year to have the mindset of this is a different year. And we may have been national champions last year, but it's a whole new fresh start. There definitely is an added pressure that we're learning to handle. What I feel like, just even as a coach, it's trying to also teach our team, it would be very easy to get comfortable in the fact that winning is easy. You know, we've now done it 3 times in a row, you know, like that's something that's just going to happen. So for me as a coach, it's very important to be training, especially our new members or training our team there is a target on our back. There is a start over and every year is different. Every routine is different. Every team is different. And so I want to make sure that we don't have that mentality ever of getting comfortable or feeling like this is going to be a given, because it's absolutely not. This past weekend when we were there, I felt that we did everything we could have possibly done in preparation and while we were at nationals. And regardless of where the results fell, I wouldn't have done anything different. I wouldn't have asked them to do anything different. So to me, that's the most important part in the finish, that we've done everything the right way and we've done everything that we possibly can. We have absolutely no regrets.
Speaking with Classy Cats head coach Sarah Heptig and captain Jenna Gillespie on the game. So once again, third straight year, you win the Palm National Championship at the D1A College Classic there in Orlando, Florida. So, you know, to win the national championship, you got to go through a prelim first. This time around, you did lead after the prelim, coach. Would you rather not be in the lead, or were you feeling comfortable after the prelim on where you were at after seeing it one time?
That is also a great question. And I would say that I have two kind of responses to that, because I do think going from prelims, I think there is a benefit to being in second place, because I think that gives you a different fire to fight with. So in some ways, I almost prefer that. But this year, kind of a unique circumstance that I feel like I can share now is that from our prelim performance, we actually had some unfortunate circumstances to where the team before we went on, somebody had gotten sick on the performance floor. When they were dancing their preliminary POM performance, I actually had no idea, but they were dancing through some things on the floor. And so I was very proud of our preliminary performance. I always feel like there's room for improvement. So I knew there were things that I wanted to grow on, but I was very happy. And then when we went backstage, I felt a different vibe from them. They were a little distracted by what they had just danced in, and they did not feel like that was their best performance. So after going through that, it did give me a little bit of a confidence, knowing that if they had put that strong of a performance under different circumstances, you know, I knew the next day that without a doubt, we could dance stronger. And then I was excited because I knew the things that I wanted to work on. We listened to the judges' critiques and that night worked on things. And I felt very confident that we could do an even better performance the next day, which we did. So.
And then the finals come, and I'm sure Arizona State is getting sick of K-State at this point. So Jenna, take me through that finals, and how well did you feel like it went once it was done?
We felt so amazing about our performance and we were so proud of it. But we have some amazing competition. So at the end of the day, all we can control is what we do. But I think we found peace in that and we were proud of what we did. So no matter what the awards came down to, we would still be proud of that. The championship is amazing, but at the end of the day, we were still so proud.
Coach, I think you told me last year that once that final was over, you felt like you got it. Was it the same feeling this year?
Yes and no, because like I said, I particularly am fond of the routine that we did this year. It was a really unique and special routine. And then this team specifically has just been incredible to coach. So I felt very confident in that. But then just dance is so unique because it's so subjective, and, you know, it's not a basket that goes in and it's a definite point. It's not, you know, crossing the line and it's a touchdown. And so you just never know how a judge is going to interpret it. So I tried not to focus on that, but I was so pleased with what they had done. I think it also would deal with how they prepared, like leading up to it before we left, but then while they were at Nationals, this team was so laser focused. We spent all of Thursday before prelims at the dance studio practicing, and we were actually making changes to our routines. We were drilling things in our routine. And then we spent all day there, and then we went back to the hotel, and then we had what's called Marley time, where it was at the actual competition arena. So we went and we did our Marley time, where there was no air conditioning. It was 30 minutes straight dancing at their very hardest. And then after that, I knew there was still some things that we hadn't done. I was a little nervous if they would agree with me or not, or if they would be a little done from practicing all day long. And they were not, they were all on board. So then we went back after dancing all day to that night. We were still practicing in the evening, and then going into prelims again, I felt like we put very strong performances in. I knew there were things that we can improve on, but I thought they were great performances. And so then come finals, they did absolutely everything that we could have possibly asked. So it was a confidence that I had not had before in a different way. But again, not knowing how the results would fall. And I was such a pleasant surprise that they did fall the way they did.
Speaking with Classy Cats head coach Sarah Heptig and captain Jenna Gillespie on the game. Okay, so Jenna, from what I've gathered of learning how cheerleading and dance, what I've learned from coach about the prep, and when it comes to the results, when it's finally being read, that to me in dance and cheerleading might be the most tense moments in sports. Because everybody's really nervous, but you've now been through this 3 years in a row. Are you still just as nervous? And take me through the reaction when you learn once again you're a national champion.
I think I'm still just as nervous every single time. And it feels like time just stands still when they're about to announce it. And you're running through all the different scenarios in your head. We could get first. We could get last place. Like, we just never know. So then hearing that we got first place was just so amazing. And even though I've experienced it before, that doesn't make it any less special every single time. And we know how hard it is to get there every year. So like coach said, it's not the norm, and we never want our team to expect it, if that makes sense. We always want to still be working for it, but it was amazing.
Jenny, you had 4 years as a Classy Cat. I mean, you started in the pandemic, right? Take me through some of your favorite memories. Like, what stands out to you about maybe some of the best games you got to be a Classy Cat at, to your favorite performances? Like, what stands out as your favorite memories?
Oh, gosh. There are just so many. I would say some of my favorites. We got to dance at the Big 12 Championship in AT&T Stadium, and then to win that game was amazing. It was one of the most nerve-wracking games I've ever been to, but so fun. And then getting to go to the Sugar Bowl and play against Alabama was amazing. New Orleans was such a cool experience. Nationals every single year, getting to travel as a team is just really special because we spend a lot of our year cheering on other sports. So then to kind of feel that love back and get to just dance and compete is always really special. Gosh, there's just so many. Those are a couple that come to mind, but there's so many more.
Well, coach, to wrap up, I'm just curious to know what's next. And I know most people don't probably understand how much work goes into getting ready for game day and getting ready for Orlando. I don't know how much of an off season you have. So is there an off season, and what comes next for your preparation heading into next year?
There is no off season in dance. We're actually we're doing an end of the year celebration this coming Monday. So that'll be our official wrap up with this amazing team. And then next weekend is our auditions for next year. And we then started all over again, start the preparing for new season. I've been working with our choreographers and already talking ideas and setting choreography dates for next year's nationals. And then looking ahead to football season and basketball season and all the different things. So there's really no time off, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It's such a blessing. And I would also like to just compliment Jenna and our senior class, because, you know, they did have the most unique circumstances. They started to when they first started, they tried out by video, and then they did not get to step foot on the field at Bill Snyder Family Stadium at all. They were in the stands for basketball season. And I truly believe that they've seen the lowest of lows and the highest of highs throughout their time on the team. And I think it is through those experiences that has helped make that senior class the leaders that they have been. And I believe that our experience this year was based on their leadership. They really helped to set our culture and set our standard in the most loving, but high standard, high accountability type environment. And I'm just so appreciative of what they've done for the program. And I think what's so special is that culture has been building. You know, every year it gets better and better. And so, you know, we're continuing to look on how do we continue building on this legacy, not only in talent, but the most important thing is the way we get there and the type of team that we have and the culture that we have. So I want to give a thank you to Jenna and the seniors for the impact they have made. And then we're ready to continue working and moving on to next year as well.
Well, thank you guys. And coaches, I shared in an email that I feel like this has become routine. And just personally, as a K-State fan and growing up here, I love it. The success has really been fun to watch and follow. So Captain Jenna Gillespie and Coach Sarah Heptick, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Once again, from the K-State Classy Cats, Head Coach Sarah Heptick and Captain Jenna Gillespie, who is a part of all three D1A Palm National champions from the College Classic in Orlando, Florida. Three in a row championships for the K-State Classy Cats.
Tremendous, tremendous work as they have built that program so much over these last few years. It's amazing to put them in that classification of some of the best in the country. And it takes some serious work when you realize the number of different approaches that they have in terms of their performances, from being with the marching band to doing their own dance routines. It's quite the deal.
Are we seeing a like a K-State crop judging type dynasty start here?
I think a crop judging team, if you're listening, it sounds like you got a team that's at your heels right now on wanting to become another dynasty.
The only thing that's holding them back is longevity, but they got time. They're coming.
Exactly.
Yeah, what, is crop judging won like 27 out of last 29 years or something like that?
It's 30 just or something ridiculous.
An incredible run for the crop judging team. I think they do their like national championship stuff in the fall. Maybe they do it twice a year. I'm not sure, but I think it was in the fall. I remember it's like November or something like that when they have their crop judging national championship winning events. Again, a big thanks to Coach Heptick and Jenna Gillespie for their time here on the Game Hour. Number two, Ave Okali coming on to talk a little bit about just the decision she made and the pain she went through with her ankle injury. And she's in charge of the music there in the locker room, and she'll tell you why. That's coming up in hour number two. Up next, I'll talk a little K-State baseball. And still to come as well, we have some K-State baseball tickets to give away. So stick around as you're listening to the game. Back on the game, Mitch Fortner, Troy Coverdale, and Owen Burke. Talk a little Bat-Cats here in just a moment. They got a pretty major, if you just heard the commercial there from Brian Smoller, that it's a very big three-game series this weekend at Twayton against number 15 Oklahoma State, a team that always hosts regionals. And, you know, K-State has now lost three Big 12 series in a row. This is where they really need to bounce back. They're at home. You need to win at least two out of three. But I will say they ended a four-game skid, even though it looked like it was going to be a comeback, and Northeastern was going to steal one. After K-State led 7-0, it was tied at 8 going to extra innings. And then K-State with a little luck on their side after a single by Kalen Culpepper, then gets home on a wild pitch, and that was enough for the Cats to win it 9-8 against, I mean, in a Northeastern team, I mean, they're always pretty good.
Yeah, they were 25-8 going into that game. So, like, this isn't a slouch team that they should have walked on or anything.
Just because maybe in college football, K-State, that would be a cakewalk any year.
Right.
You know, baseball's a little bit different. Also, UConn is also in the same boat. I mean, UConn's having a 500 year this year, but they have recently been a regional team.
Yeah, I was like,
every year.
They're having a down year right now at 500.
And Northeastern goes to regionals all the time. So those are two really good teams that K-State went on the road midweek between two very big Big 12 series. It's been a grind this year for the Bat-Cats, and they get the win 9-8 over Northeastern. You know, heading into April, K-State was actually playing some really good baseball. They had won 10 in a row. April has not been the month. For the Bat-Cats this year, it has been a mid-season grind. They're not playing their best baseball. And, you know, to me, I know pitching has been the criticism, and it still needs to be made of note that, you know, for most of the year they have not had Tyson Nabors. We finally saw Ty Rule. He made his return for one inning against UConn in a start and looked fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure we'll see a little bit of him this weekend. You know, it hasn't been consistent. And even yesterday's game, I mean, heck, you know, that eighth inning got pretty ugly there for a while because you had in three straight batters, you had a hit by pitch, and a balk. And that helped springboard Northeastern into a 4-run lead. I think K-State baseball, to put it in general terms, just needs to take a big, deep breath.
Right.
I mean, these errors that they've been committing, which they've had 14 in this month, you know, 14 in 10 games, that, you know, it's just, most of them just should have been routine plays.
That's the part of it I don't understand, is just how so good for the first month of the season defensively, and then here in April they've gotten to where it feels like they just throw the ball around the yard all the time.
Yeah. It's not Pete Hughes baseball at all.
Well, the problem has been, at times it's just snowballed. You know, and we've seen multiple errors in the same inning, and it just, they're giving away runs, and that is, you know, it's been a number of times this month where, you know, K-State has, you know, maybe a pitcher has made a mistake, and they, you know, when they're heading the count 2-1, they hit the batter. Or you got a full count, hit the batter. That has happened a number of times, and then here comes a home run, and before you know it, after a mistake and then a pitch that was left up, it's 2-0 in the first inning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this team, I said it early on, this team likes a dramatic comeback, and they've had plenty of those this year. But in the month of April, they're 4-6. But offensively has been a bit of a surprise, because after March, I was just thrilled by how well the offense had been operating. A number of guys hitting over 300. As a team, you could argue they were the deadliest offense in the Big 12.
Yep.
Rivaled by Texas Tech.
Yep.
Hitting home runs, being aggressive, you know, walks and strikeouts were on pace as last year, which was much more improved of taking walks. But at the same time, and I think this has been, you know, a problem recently of like when they should swing, they're not swinging.
Yep.
You know, when it is two outs, you're protecting the strike zone, there's two outs, and there's not enough swinging on those borderline pitches. Too many takes. But as a team in the month of April, just hitting 229. Chuck Ingram is only hitting 182. Nick English, who had such a hot start, you know, because he's not a veteran, obviously there's more slack, but he's hitting 179. Mm. You know, Brady Day continues to be, I think, really good. He has been the consistent part of the K-State offense. He's hitting 344 this month. And I've mentioned this name multiple times, but I've been very happy about Jaden Parsons, who's been playing at third base. That's going to end it for hour one of the game. Baseball tickets and Aoki Lee next hour on the game.